The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Good evening, and you are listening to the Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox win a series against the Blue Jays on a day where we trade Connelly early for Curtis Meade. We'll get into all of it. Gentlemen, first, let's start off on this series, in particular this game. Number one, what did you think of the hats that we wore in this series?
Yeah,
I'm out.
Yeah,
I don't know. I like the traditional Red Sox hat. I don't know. To me, all that stuff is marketing. And as I've stated so many times, I could give two blanks about John Henry's wallet. It's just another hat they can put in the pro shop. And for that, I don't care. I won't buy it.
I was out on this one. Yeah, it's whatever. I get it. The Hall of Fame day. It's fine. But yeah, it didn't really look like a Red Sox hat.
I had to ask only because I know that no one really cares about it, so I want to prolong what everyone really wants to hear and keep asses glued to the seats. So let's start with this series. Obviously, Ranger Suarez comes back today. I think he goes almost five innings.
Yeah, he just went four. Yeah,
he went about four, right? Four. So, I mean, he got himself out of trouble. There was a couple of moments where it seems like that the Blue Jays were either going to break it open and score first, or start to come back and make a threat to the offense of the Red Sox before we were able to score some more runs. But Ranger got out of it. What did you guys think of his performance tonight?
I thought that's what you could expect from a guy who hadn't pitched in, 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks? Then he gets sick, and, there's no rehab assignment, so you wouldn't expect him to go beyond 65 to – maybe 85 pitches, and for him to get through four, he wasn't perfect. And you'd love to see him get to that fifth coming off of missing time. But I think that's what you can expect in that spot. And he zeroed him. So, to me, he did his job. And the bullpen was obviously good until the ninth. He gave up a meaningless run. But, when there were high leverage outs to get, the whole staff got him today.
Yeah, if the bullpen, came in and gave up a bunch of runs, maybe you'd second guess it a little more. You'd like to see him go five, especially because he really just looked like he picked up where he left off. His stuff looked really good. His curveball looked great. He had some punch outs early, and he just looked like he didn't miss a beat. So, and we know he can go deep. I would have liked to see him go deeper, but like you said, Jeremy, I mean, there's really no reason to push him coming off of that much time. And the bullpen did its job, and so it really was, I guess, best case scenario, how it went.
Yeah, I thought it was impressive that he came back and really looked like he didn't miss a beat. I kind of expected to see him kind of come in and maybe struggle. And I mean, at the end of the day, there were moments where, the Blue Jays posed a threat. And I mean, they've got a good offense. So, I mean, I they could do that to any pitcher. It was encouraging to see himself, get himself out of those moments, right? It's in particular with strikeouts in crucial moments, and doing so by nibbling with some pitches on the corners and really freezing some guys, especially some of their better hitters. I mean, there were moments where Vladimir Guerrero looked absolutely puzzled at the plate, but knew they were strikes and just walked right back to the dugout. So that was encouraging to see. I think to either your point or it might've been Doug who said it. The bullpen's done its job now even in the midst of the streak and coming out of it, they've done their part. I mean, even when the streak ended, it wasn't a result of them coming in there and just absolutely imploding. That has been one of the more underlying notions or themes in the midst of this resurgence of the Red Sox, is that the bullpen's not only they're doing their job, they're doing it well, especially from some of the guys that had question marks, right? Like Weissart now all of a sudden looks half decent in some moments, and then you have Slayton Being able to turn it over to Whitlock and Chapman and really get the job done, which I'm encouraged about. What's your guys' thoughts on the bullpen overall?
Yeah, my big takeaway today was to add to the run total so that you didn't have to go to Chapman. So he didn't pitch in the loss yesterday. He doesn't pitch today. So a guy who really had been pitching a lot, and according to Carrabas, is nursing a hamstring injury. I think it was big to go win a game, you know, not a blowout, but win a game comfortably, and to take some of the high stress guys and you know, save them for tomorrow. The other thing I want to note, just generally speaking, as we sit here today, is as coming out of the All-Star break, we were all talking about how bad, even though they were still on the streak, how bad they had been at home. And then you have 10-day homestand against three, you know, with the exception of the Yankees, the rest of the division. And they go 8-2. And the way they win today with a low leverage end of the game, again, you can avoid the back end of the bullpen. And they're not just winning games, guys. They are winning the way that this team should. We all described it in the offseason. This is the way this team would win. Pitching, situational hitting. They had three sack bunts today. Duran with a two-out RBI base hit to get it to 3-0. Like, all of it's we're starting to see some consistency, and that's where I start to believe that they can get this thing through August and into September with a chance to be competitive. Because when we evaluated the roster before the season, this is what we said. This is how they have to win. And now they're doing it, and they're doing it consistently. And I know we're going to talk in a minute about Meade, how he fits in there. But as it's currently constituted, the lineup today, I mean, you can't ask for any more. I mean, we all were concerned about this 10-game home streak, and we're going out west. And how many people are going to guess we went 8-2 in the homestand? I wasn't one of them. So really encouraged.
Yeah, and 17-3 in the month of July, like they said. So, I mean, that's insane. And the bullpen has been a big part. The bullpen's been really good. Guerrero's been really good. And he throws
heat. I love watching him pitch.
He throws heat, man. He looks really good. And like you said, Chris, you know, Whitesuit's starting to come around. Slayton has looked better. And, you know, if that's happening, we can really be dangerous because – like you said, Jeremy, like games like this where we don't need to throw Chapman out there, you know, we don't need to waste guys' arms that we really need in big leverage spots, only helps your bullpen, only helps your starters. And, you know, we knew Ranger wasn't going to be able to go long today. Some guys probably knew ahead of time they were going to get the call earlier than they normally would. And they looked ready. Weissert looked really good with those, you know, a couple of those sliders really died off the plate. And we like you said, Jeremy, this, you know, the way they're winning is really even more impressive almost than the record. And it's just the way that they have to win. It's the biggest, for sure, the biggest blueprint Tracy has on the team is the small ball, the bunting, the stealing. I mean, three sack bunts, one of them was first and second, led directly to second and third for Duran to hit that single, two RBI single. And that's what you want to see from this team. That's what we were looking to see all year. We weren't getting it. Now we're getting it. You're putting situational hitting together with outstanding pitching. And it's just a combination for winning baseball. And winning baseball that I don't see really stopping anytime soon. I don't think this is a fluke win streak. I think we're really starting to put this team together.
Yes. I mean, you mentioned, you know, the success of this team and some of the indicators. And I think the reason why I am starting to question less and less about the sustainability of this winning as we head into the dog days of summer into some meaningful baseball, at least that season, is a couple of different things. I look at the fact that the biggest question marks for this team prior to this resurgence was obviously the offense and the bullpen, right? And at the end of the day, when you look at since they went on their winning streak and even coming out of it and in the midst of it, they've scored almost 5 to 6 runs every game, at least from an average standpoint, right? Over the course of the last 30 games, right? So, like, we check that box. The bullpen, like we said, starting to have a lot more consistency. We're not turning it over to Whitlock and Chapman as often as we had to rely on just keeping us in tied games or put us in a position to come back. Now, if they are coming in, it's in high leverage, hold the lead. And in some cases, we don't even have to turn to them because we have such a lead, 3+ runs or more, right? So we check that box. And then we look at, like Jeremy said, right, like the homestand. This team was, I joked around about the fact that they might set a record, and not a record you want to be a part of, where it's going to be like the worst home record for a team this century. I mean, they were starting to challenge like Chicago White Sox status. And at this point, they're starting to figure it out, right? So like, we check that box. And then when you look at the AL East, right? I believe in the last 13 games, they're 11-2. They swept the Yankees, swept the Rays, and then took 2 of 3 from the Baltimore Orioles and the Blue Jays in the last 4 series that they've played, right? So you look at that, like, you can't play any better against your division. Now, I think if you look at not only the way that they played against the AL East, but more importantly, how they have fared when the win streak ended. Because I look at, like, when they swept the Yankees, we all thought they were going to take off. And then they had that stinker where they lost. I think it was to the Washington Nationals. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Them or the Rockies. I can't remember which series.
It might have even been both of them in the midst of that. And you started saying to ourselves, oh, here's the Sox that we've seen all year, right? Where they win a series they shouldn't. And then they come out and they just absolutely suck against the team that they should absolutely demolish. And I was interested to see how this team would respond, because we all knew the streak would end. And when it did end against the Orioles, I'm like, all right, do they lose that series? No, they still find a way to win. Then they come into the Toronto series and you start thinking, all right, Toronto hasn't been that good this year, but like, they started to play better and they still have an offense that anyone has to take notice of. At the end of the day, this is still pretty much 90% of a team that was within 10 millimeters of winning a World Series against the vaunted Los Angeles Dodgers. And we took 2 of 3 of them. So I think at the end of the day, like, it's still a large enough sample size. Do I want to see more? Yes. But there's a large enough sample size here in the midst of them winning and then coming out of that win streak being broken, where I'm like, there's a level of consistency in things that I want to see and expect to see if this team is going to be serious in playing meaningful baseball as the season progresses. And we check those boxes. I'm wondering if you guys are seeing pretty much the same stuff. Like, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, to go further in depth on like just the difference between certain situations now and then, I mean, it wasn't that we weren't trying to bunt. It would, you know, pop up back to the pitcher, or they couldn't put it in play. And on, I think, more than one occasion, it might've been Monasterio, I can't remember, where their bunt, they're so desperate that they bunted right through the second strike and were out on a foul ball. And Narvaez today, for example, he fouls off a bunt, and I revert back to earlier in the year, and I'm like, oh, here we go again. But no, Will Middlebrooks discussed that based on the situation, first and second, you really want the bunt down the third baseline. It's like Narvaez could hear him next pitch. He puts it perfectly down the third baseline, forcing the third baseman to field the ball, which frees up third base, so there's no play there. It was like, what is going on? That was perfect. So just little things like that. Some of the stupid running end into outs, you know, you don't see it as much anymore. They're still being aggressive. Duran, after his hit, goes and steals second base. Like, the base running, the bunting, the moving guys over, man on second, you see a ground ball to the right side of the infield to move the guy. Just little stuff that's happening with consistency leads to long-term results, leads to consistent winning. You already have the pitching, you already have the defense. It was always this team offensively. And so now you are seeing a man on third, less than two outs. There's an actual sac fly. I mean, it was pathetic how much they were failing in these instances that I'm describing, where now they're consistently performing. And you see that the issue of getting over 2 or 3 runs a game, now they're scoring, like today they score 6. And they're scoring runs in multiple innings. And they're putting consistent pressure on the pitching staff, which is getting starters out of the game, which is leading to better results later in the game. Because 6 weeks ago, guys, we couldn't score in the late innings. Forget it if you couldn't get to the starter. They couldn't beat a power arm in an inning. They couldn't do it. And now all of a sudden they get a leadoff guy on, and they move him over. And then finally, my last point is they're hitting in with runners in scoring position. I don't remember the last time I saw a game where it was like 1 of 12 with runners in scoring position, where they're putting pressure on the defense, but you can't steal home. So if you're just that anemic with two outs and runners in scoring position, you're going to lose games. Well, guess what? Duran tonight has the big hits, which separates the game from a 1-0 tight game to a 3-0 game. And then they add on late. So it's not just one category where they're playing better offensively. their situation, their offensive situational hitting is like a complete about face from 6 weeks ago. Like that's the thing that baffles me more than anything with the winning and the winning streak and still now winning post-winning streak is they look like a different team. And in all of the best ways. And I said this last week was when I was on the podcast, it's a different mindset with Tracy in the dugout. Cora was not, and I said the stat, it was some crazy stat, like they've sacrificed bunted like 30 times or 35 times, 30 of them are under Tracy, 5 under Cora. So it is a dugout decision to say, we're going to play this differently. We're not going to sit around and wait for a three-run home run with a roster that doesn't hit home runs. And so here you see consistent winning because it appears that firing Cora actually wound up being the right move because Tracy is playing to what this roster offers him, which is speed and athleticism, not the long ball.
Yeah, totally agree. I think your point about the runners in scoring positions, great point, because that was the story of the season. For the first half, that was so bad. We were getting guys on and just never bringing them home, never scoring runs. And they've turned that around completely. And I think a word we used a lot last year when we had our kind of resurgence and made the playoffs was resiliency. It seemed like, you know, they'd get swept and it didn't really seem to bother them. They'd come right back. They'd play hard. And they'd play, and they'd start winning series again. And it seems like they still have that this year. You know, it might have been tough losing, you know, after the 15-game win streak and then getting back up for another game. You know, that could have been tough, but they did it. And, you know, it didn't seem to bother them. It seemed like they're playing the same way. And it seems like a resilient team that they're, you know, obviously they got high on the 15-game win streak, but they're not letting themselves get too low on the losses. And they're just riding the wave right now. And everything's turning up, you know, their way. And they're just going out there playing their game. Every guy is playing their own game and, you know, not doing too much and just doing what we need from them. And it's working. And this whole team's coming together. You know, Abreu gets out of his slump, gets those late inning runs that we, you know, we didn't need, but it always helps. And it's impressive. It's just an impressive, impressive month, impressive streak. And I do think, you know, winning two series after losing the streak is impressive. You know, it's showing that they're in this, that they're a real team, that this wasn't just a win streak that they caught some bad teams on, that they got hot at the right time. No, it's they're in it, and they're a real, you know, they're a resilient team. Losses aren't hurting them. You know, obviously they bounced back from the worst team in the league to a wild card team. So I think the last 2 years has, because you know, it's, I'm not going to say it's all Tracy, because they were a pretty resilient team last year too, but Tracy's blueprint, you know, fingerprints are all over this team right now. And I agree, you know, firing Cora was the right decision. It took a while to, I don't think anyone said it was the wrong decision, but it took a little while to actually see how good of a decision it really was for this team.
Doug, I love that you brought up the point of resiliency. And not so much pushback, but here's where I may say that I somewhat disagree. I think that last year the team was resilient until they weren't. And here's what I mean by that, is that once they got to a team like the Yankees, specifically in the playoffs, where they were clearly outmatched, and even in the midst of the tail end of that season, where like they could have blown that. We forget that the end of the season got dicey, where we ended up needing a Rafael, a miracle, to basically cement our position in the playoffs against the Detroit Tigers. When they got to a team where they were completely outmatched, there was no game plan for this team that we could lean on and leverage, and that you could see that the team said to themselves, like, oh, we know this is how we can win. When you even look at the game that we won in that Yankee series in the wild card, like, it was more situational, not because we manifested it through a game plan, right? Like, we just happened to hang in there with good pitching. Yoshida ends up hitting a single, scores two runs, and like, that's the situation that presented itself. That was not the game plan. That was not Cora playing to the team that he had and saying like, oh yeah, I'm going to put Yoshida in there and wait until my moment to strike and score a two-run single and try and win a game 3-1, right? Whereas this year, it is evident and clear, and Jeremy brought it up, where specifically through this resurgence and then now coming out of even the streak, there is a plan to score runs. Like in today's game was the perfect way to demonstrate exactly what we're talking about. This team was in a dogfight in the beginning of this game where you're just in a stalemate waiting to see which offense is going to break through. And how did we do it? We literally bunted a guy over. One on, no outs. Like Cora's not doing that. He's like, let's play for the two-run home run and then go from there. Like we gave an out, bunted the guy to second, and then we score a run off a single, right? And then we did that multiple times this game, first and second. When's the last time you saw the Sox first and second, no outs, bunt the guys over second and third? I haven't seen it like ever. No, no. And if it has, it was earlier this year with Chad Tracy. And I think that is the distinct difference with this team is that both teams, I agree, were resilient, but in different ways. The resiliency that this team has is through the trust that they have in their manager to put them in the best position to win on a night in and night out basis based on the construction of this roster. Whereas last year, the resiliency was all vibes. It was Alex Cora being a player's coach or manager and feeling good because he's patting you on the back and telling you, you're the best. Don't worry. Things are going to be okay, until they weren't. And they had no answer, and they demonstrated that they had zero ability to show any faith in one another to actually get it done when it came time to it through an actual game plan on the field. And that's where I do think that there is a difference. However, I want to shift gears here because this is what everyone wants to talk about. In the wee hours of the night, the Boston Red Sox traded Connelly Early for Curtis Meade from the Washington Nationals. Curtis Meade plays third base, I believe, for the Nationals. He could play many positions in the infield. It looks like he is going to play second base, seemingly, for the Boston Red Sox. Number one, what did you think of the trade? How did you feel about it being Connelly Early, being basically the candidate that we threw over to the Washington Nationals in exchange for Curtis Meade?
My initial reaction was, holy bleep, Breslow did something. And that is reason for cautious optimism that he's not going to sit on his hands this deadline. I also like that he went out and did it now. And, you know, look, in my opinion, at the end of the day, now that I've had, you know, whatever, today to kind of process it, I'm meh on the trade. And obviously we don't have the foresight of what Meade's going to do versus, you know, Conley's going to do. So if Conley gets healthy and pitches lights out and this guy just doesn't hit, the pressure's too much, then obviously this looks like a bad trade, although both players have terms, so it's going to go on for the next couple of years. But here's where my concern is. Breslow's not thinking big enough. A one-for-one trade shows no original thought. Here's a guy, you know, we're dealing from our surplus in the pitching. Give us one of your surplus guys, and it helps both teams. In my opinion, Connelly Early was a valuable chip, not a prospect, a proven big league player, pitched in the playoffs. Okay, so more value than a prospect. You could have put him with any number of other prospects and potentially another big leaguer and went out and got someone that made a real difference with real pedigree and a track record of being a big league, potentially, hopefully, all-star. Okay, now instead, they take a guy who has had a good season, but we've all heard it. He was DFA'd last year. He has half a season. That's not what we're looking for here. You know, so if Meade comes in and hits five in August and five in September and continues with the other side of his offensive production for the season, he's probably going to help you win a few games and it'll be all right for the season. But to me, I wanted Breslow to think bigger, and Connelly Early should have been in a package with Duran, Siegler, Arias, and some other miscellaneous prospects for a bigger proven piece if they were available. Now, what I don't know is he's called the Royals and they're going, get the hell out of here, we're not trading Witt. And he's called Houston and no, we're get the hell out of here, we're not trading Yordan Alvarez and whatever else. So we don't know that, okay? But assuming that those things haven't taken place, I think Breslow was thinking too small with this move. That's my initial reaction. You're on mute.
Sorry, it didn't work. I hit the button. I understand that. I understand that, you know, you were thinking better, bigger, and we all thought Early would kind of be a part of a bigger package. But I don't hate the trade. I think I'm going to, you know, I think sometimes it's it's tough to look down a couple years from now and be like, oh, well, we lost that trade. And it's like, yeah, you know, I don't think anyone thinks Connelly Early isn't going to be a good pitcher. But, and, you know, maybe me doesn't work out. But even if that happens, I really wouldn't come down on them for making this move. Sometimes you got to take a risk. And we needed a power right-handed bat. We're putting one into the lineup. He's a big pull guy. It seems like his swing will be really good at Fenway. We had extra pitching, like you said. This guy, I mean, Early is on the DL. We have guys. I think the resurgence of Bennett really made this feel better a little bit to get rid of Early, because I mean, there's a lot of guys that are capable of pitching on this team, and if you can really plug a second baseman that's going to put up, you know, 25 home runs, I think that really helps our team. I think that's kind of what we've been looking for all season, is a power right-handed bat, you know, to plug in with maybe behind Contreras, or, you know, and like some of the guys in the chat saying, you know, he's a young player. We still have him now for 3 years. You know, he'll be under control. He's young, 4 years, right? And I like the move. I really do like the move. I think it could really help us this year. And maybe down the line, Connelly Early will be a better player than Meade, and everyone will say we lost the trade. But we've been asking Breslow to make moves, and this isn't a huge move, but it's a solid move. And, you know, trading a guy like Connelly Early takes some guts, and I like it. I don't think it's losing Early is going to hurt us that much right now, but I think gaining, you know, a 20 home run guy will help us more than Early will not hurt us. If that makes sense.
Now you're on mute,
Chris. Now you're muted.
I did not hit the button. I just jumped the gun. Well, listen, the war room knows how I feel at 5 a.m. with how I was responding. However, since 5 a.m, I've had a little bit of time to think about this trade. And I think that there's a couple of different ways to look at it. I think if I'm looking at it from the Breslow side, it's somewhat encouraging because the trades that he has done in the middle of the season have basically been for non-impact players and or pitchers. And what I mean is, like, they're not coming in here and really moving the needle one way or the other in his tenure here as the vice president of baseball operations. That's been his MO in season. So the fact that he's bringing someone that's going to be an everyday player and have some sort of impact on the team, hopefully positive, is a step in the right direction. That's one. Two, the part that bothers me about this is that it's the hindsight aspect of it. And it's the fact that we all know that Connelly Early, if he wasn't hurt, could have been put into a package in the offseason to bring in real major league talent. Like, he was thrown around in the Ketel Marte trade and various other players in the offseason, right? And I agree with Jeremy. I think in the right package, that probably would have not had him be one of the highlights, even hurt. We probably could have brought in a big fish. But I think the reality is that when you really look at the names that the Red Sox have been attached to in the middle of this season, I think Witt was really the biggest name where there was a direct, like, hey, the Red Sox may have at least inquired. We've all speculated players like Tatis and Yordan Alves as far as targets that we would potentially want for the Boston Red Sox, but there's not been a direct, hey, the Red Sox have picked up the phone and called. It seems like Witt is that only person, and I think we all speculate that I don't think the Royals are giving up on him. They'd be idiots too, but they are a dumb franchise in some moments, so you never know. But nonetheless, I don't think Connelly Early on his own obviously was going to fetch Bobby Witt, but he could have been part of a package. So I think the frustration is that my gut told me, like, we gave away Connelly Early for a guy that this is his fourth team now in, like, the last year. Yes, he has good production this year, but he doesn't necessarily have the career to back it up. So it's like you're giving away a prospect, which I'm fine for when it's proven talent. I don't know if I would say Meade is proven, right? Like, he's basically maybe a step or two ahead of a prospect that's come in and had an impact, but not long enough to say where I'm like, oh, I can count on this guy to be a potential all-star or close to it at second base for the Boston Red Sox for this foreseeable future. Now, if I look at the positives, second base has been an albatross position for the Boston Red Sox for quite some time. We have never replaced Dustin Pedroia, right? And I'm not saying that this guy is going to be the next Pedroia. I don't think he has the defensive makeup. He certainly doesn't have the speed around the base pads. And I don't think he has the leadership quality at face value. However, the offensive production, his swing, his metrics, and his spray chart does look like he could have an impact similar to Dustin Pedroia at Fenway Park in particular, you know, if all goes well. And that's somewhat exciting. I think if it had to be Connelly Early or like a Peyton Tolley, for me, I got to be honest, I was never that high on Connelly Early. I don't think he's going to be someone's bona fide number one, maybe a number two. I think he's more like a number three starter, a four or five, just because of the makeup, potential injury, and now a minor injury history in his short tenure here at the major leagues, right? And the more that I think about it, I think that if I'm thinking that, there's probably a lot of general managers in the MLB that are looking at it the same way. High upside with Connelly Early, but there's been concerns even prior to the injury that were talked about in the offseason by other teams, the fact that his makeup, physically, there's concerns of durability and sustainability, the way that he throws, and the fact that he might get injured, and wouldn't you know it, he ends up getting injured this season. So the fact that we treated him while he's on the DL for a guy like Curtis Meade and the potential upside, the more that I just look at it face value, don't hate it. But nonetheless, it's what it is. I'm with Jeremy in the sense that, like, I really do feel like the Connelly Early could have been attached to something else that was bigger, better. But the more that I look at the potential targets, I just don't know if that's where the Red Sox are. I don't know if they're big game hunting right now for a Yordan Alvarez, a Tatis Jr. I think they're looking at reasonable contracts with control. You know, if they got Bobby Witt for an absolute steal, sure, I do think I could see that. I know that there was a report right before we jumped on where basically the Sox reached out for Jeremy Pena and Astros hung up the phone. I don't know the specific reason as to why they hung up the phone, if it's a reality of the what we offered, or they're just like, no, we're not giving up on Jeremy Pena. More to come on that. But if a guy like Jeremy Pena is now off the market, I think Meade is a step below a Jeremy Pena or like a CJ Abrams, which it looked like that was going to be the quote-unquote big game hunting that we were looking for. I think now my question is, what do you think realistically the Red Sox are going to turn to help bolster this team as they enter basically the end of this trade deadline? For me, I think it's probably some additional help with relief pitchers. I don't think there's another bat coming, guys. I think that Franklin Arias is almost as close to untouchable. I'm not saying he should be, but I think that's how the organization views it, because I think they're looking at Story coming back, playing shortstop, waiting for that contract to end, and then inserting Franklin Arias and hoping he can be the answer for shortstop for the foreseeable future. What's your guys' thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, what would I do and what do I think they're going to do? What I want to do is go still get an impact right-hand bat and fix still something I think is going to underwhelm. I think the team's ultimate downfall, and while the season will end short of a championship or whatever you're going to consider a successful season, to me, with the American League being down, I think you should expect to advance around. And I think what's going to prevent that is the offense. It's still the offense. When you get to September, you're not facing fourth and fifth starters. You're facing everybody's ace, everybody's number two, and everybody's number three. It's a different monster. This team, I don't think, is going to beat good pitching in those types of games. So I think, to me, that's what they should do. But I think you're right, Chris. I think that the Meade signing signifies that they have checked the box of adding right-handed bat with some power. And I can see them saying the starting pitching's been very good and they're deep. And you know, now they've got Suarez back and everything else. So I wouldn't be surprised if they make a move for the bullpen and that'd be it.
Yeah, same. I'd be very surprised if they brought in another big bat. But like Jeremy, that would be definitely where I would be looking, is to bolster the DH position. You know, Yoshida at DH in a playoff series does not look good. And if they can bring in, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, Alvarez, but if they can bring in someone that can really just, you know, give us an actual power bat in the at the DH position, someone that actually can scare some people, that you know, you actually, no one is believing, you know, Yoshida's ever going to hit a home run when he comes to the plate. Maybe he gets a single, right? But if you put someone in that spot that brings fear to the plate, that this guy can actually go yard in a big spot with people on, that is where my focus would be at the end of the trade deadline here, is, you know, really bring in a guy that is established, that you know can hit and can give us some more power in the middle of the lineup. And, you know, our DH is, you know, the team is looking good, but the DH is still a weak position for us, and home runs is still at the bottom of the league. And if you can, you know, bounce that number up the last couple months of the season and into the playoffs, that is where I would be looking for our focus for the team.
Yeah, what I would do and what I think they are going to do is completely do different things. Yeah. I don't say that negatively. It's just a reality. I think that they're going to look for help for the bullpen and call it a day. I think they check the box for a right-handed hitter with potential power to support this lineup. I think when it comes to the DH, I think the hope is that Romy Gonzalez can get on track and be consistent, because if he does, that provides you that opportunity to not have to rely on Yoshida, have additional power from a profile perspective over Yoshida with a high level of consistency at the plate. And then obviously he could play first base in the worst of worst situations. God forbid that something happens to Wilson Contreras. Obviously, if something happens to Wilson Contreras, you're not going far anyway. So let's not even talk about that. I think realistically with shortstop, hopefully I'm wrong. I think that they're going to maybe turn it over to Story. And if they don't, I think the reality is you got Franklin Arias. Some are saying closer. I know we got someone in the chat saying he expects to see him there by September. I don't know if that's accurate. I hope he's right, because I'd rather see him than Story. But the good news is even if you don't, you've got Monasterio and Siegler who could both play shortstop, and you could do a platoon there. I mean, you can mix and match now between Meade, Durbin, Monasterio, and Siegler, and play the hot hand in wherever the position of need is open. I think that Monasterio and Siegler have proven that as long as they're in the right mindset and you give them at least enough of a sample size and at bats, they can contribute something to this lineup, which is great to see. The other biggest need, honestly, for me, if I was going to do something, is at catcher. It's fortifying the bullpen and bringing in another arm. It would be bringing in a power catcher, because Narvaez, he's definitely dropped off from last season. And I don't know if that's a result of, obviously, just now he's gone through a couple of, you know, quote unquote, full seasons with the Red Sox and the wear and tear that he's not necessarily used to, and that having some sort of impact on his offensive production, that could be a part of it. And then Wong is just so streaky, right? And like, as we've seen and know, you can't have streakiness in the playoffs. You have to try and mitigate that offensively in your lineup as best as possible. And I think if you were able to fortify this lineup with a real like power catcher that's going to provide average to above average defense, which we have between Wong and Narvaez, like that would potentially take us over the top with what we have. Do I think they're going to do it? Probably not. Especially now that Langeliers basically has a torn meniscus. He is now going to be out for the rest of the season. I don't see anyone trading for him. And I just don't realistically think some of the other names that have been out there, the Sox are going to go after. So I don't see them doing it. So before we close out, let's quickly just turn. We have a 4-game series. We're going out west against the Oakland Athletics, or the soon-to-be Las Vegas Athletics. Guys, what do you foresee in this 4-game series? Obviously, teams completely on two different trajectories. The A's were in a position where they looked like they were going to have a stranglehold potentially on a wild card position. They are now pretty much far out of it. And then you have the Boston Red Sox just climbing the charts, now have complete control of the second wild card position. Who do you got in this series?
The pitching matchups are so tilted in the Red Sox favor. They really should win 3 out of 4 in this series. I don't love Sandoval, but he battled in his last start. He should continue to improve, especially with his location as he gets some innings under him coming off the injury. But other than that, I mean, we got Bennett, Toley, and Gray in this series. And you should, frankly, I know it's baseball and you can't say it because another guy could come out and shove, but the way the two teams are trending in the pitching matchups, this thing's really ripe to win the series, and I really think they should.
Yeah, if this was a 3-game series, I'd probably be saying sweep. It's hard to sweep a 4-game series, so I'd say 3 out of 4. But I will not be surprised if we take all 4.
Yeah, I mean, I don't ever predict sweeps, especially in 4 games. Like, it's just very hard to expect. I think at minimum we should take 3 of 4. To me, anything less than 3 of 4 is a disappointment. I mean, obviously, if you split, is the worst thing in the world with the way we've been playing? No. But I know everyone's talking about us going out to the West Coast and playing some of the better talent. To me, this series is just as indicative of how real the Sox really are, because the Sox have actually played up to their competition in a lot of cases this season and played absolutely down and below their competition against some of the lowly teams in the MLB. This is, to Jeremy's point, ripe for the taking. We should take at least 3 of 4, potentially sweep. And with the way that the Sox have lost to crappy teams this year, if they go out there and split or God forbid lose this series, it could diminish the value of everything that we've done over this 30-game stretch pretty quickly. And the fact that they're out on the West Coast could make things even tougher from a time perspective and how that affects the body. So let's just go out there, take care of business, solidify what we have been doing for the last 30 games, and let's get it done.
And more importantly, you have the Dodgers on Friday.
100%.
So, you know, take advantage of the bad team before you take the juggernaut.
Yeah, and you want to, you know, feel good going into that series.
For sure. So,
yeah.
Couldn't agree more. Anything else you gents have?
Go Sox.
Go Sox, hell yeah.
Go Sox. We have been the Bastards of Boston Baseball on the Fire Breslow podcast. You could find us on YouTube, X Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. We appreciate it. You guys have yourselves a great night.